Hey guys, welcome back. This is part two of my conversation with Rama. It was really exciting. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Enjoy. So, and then let me ask about the now in the culture space of agency, because yeah. I guess I think everyone has a few friends who are in agency,
yeah,
in one way or another. Yeah. And agency people talk about the toxicity.
Yeah.
They talk about the pressure. They talk about the workload and everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's worth it? Do you think that it's sustainable?
I would say it's worth it, because I'm not saying, and this is not to condone anything.
Yeah.
I'm just saying when you're young enough,
yeah,
you know, you party. It's normal for you when you're like 25, 27. Like when you're below 30, it's normal for you to say, I'm partying on a Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, depending on
and you go on a bender, you know, you go on a bender. You see you till 3 a.m, then you sleep for like 2 hours. The next day, you're productive.
Yeah.
When you have that energy, instead of, you know, spending all that energy partying and doing all that stuff that just takes your money away, I would say in terms of personal growth, spend your time building yourself.
Yeah.
And you can either go for training, go for classes, online classes are available, or you could go the route of give me more responsibilities and I will get my experience for my career based on those responsibilities. At some points, it gets a bit difficult. I'm not going to lie, because the work-life balance, especially for people who are 30 plus, when now you want to have a family. You want a wife, you want kids. And you keep asking yourself, why am I working so hard if these kids don't see enough of me? Like, who am I working for? I'm no longer working for myself.
Yeah.
Then now you start thinking about agency differently. And now you find a lot of guys transition either to senior roles, very senior.
Yeah.
You're in charge of the guys who are working that much because they need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need to work so that they get things faster.
Yeah.
Or you move to the client side. And you become a client, you know, because clients have a regular schedule.
Yeah.
You get in maybe at 8 a.m, you leave at 5, 6,
yeah,
and you're gone for the day.
Okay.
At least you have, you'll be making the same amount of money.
Yeah.
You'll be seeing your kids more often. But then client side, like we used to always joke about, is a bit boring because you only work on one brand.
Yeah.
You know, like if your brand gets boring, my gosh, I don't know what you're going
to
do.
What's going to happen to you? So before we leave the agency conversation, maybe if you could just give us like a really quick skeleton of, because you talked about the structure within a digital agency and what that sort of looks like from bottom to the top.
So if I give the basic structure of a digital agency, you have the guys who post what is seen a lot, the stuff on social media. You have community managers at the very bottom.
Yeah.
You have a community manager and you have your... Yeah, so you have a community manager at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Beside the community managers, you have media buyers.
And how much would the community manager be?
It depends. You know, like, I can't give you a figure because I'd be lying. You know, it depends on the industry you're in. Are you on the client side? Are you on the agency side? Okay. How much experience do you have?
Okay.
So there's a community manager at the entry level. So that's a person who does reporting. They post and schedule stuff that is going out there, the communication.
Okay.
And then I'd say on the same level or or maybe slightly higher, you have the media buyers. So your media buyers are the guys who boost the stuff the community manager is. So they work close together.
Yeah.
Then you have your DTP designers. The DTP designers are guys who are given what the creatives, the art director, the creative directors come up with in terms of instead of a creative direction. And they resize that stuff for digital.
Yeah.
Because you have to put it on Google, you have to put it on apps,
mm-hmm.
you have to put it on your social medias, it has to go on email.
Mm-hmm.
So the community manager does the distribute the content everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And beside them, they sit with designers, ETP guys who resize the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then above them, on some agencies beside them, you have the media planners.
Mm-hmm.
The media planners decide where the content is going to go and for how long.
Mm-hmm.
Above the media planners, you have the media and innovations guys, like the media leads.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the guys who come up to us and tell us it's the latest technology on each specific channel.
Yeah.
This is how we can utilize some of these things. If there's AI, mm-hmm. those are the guys. Mm-hmm. If it's determining the budget for the quarter, for the year, and ensuring yeah. budgets are spent, nothing goes above, beyond.
Those are the guys.
Those are the guys.
Okay.
Beside those guys, you have the strategists. Mm-hmm. So you have the content strategists. Mm-hmm. Content strategist is the guy who decides, yeah, this creative idea is going to be interpreted like this. This is how it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And then above that, now you have the head of digital mm-hmm. in most cases. Mm-hmm. So there's copywriters somewhere in that structure, mm-hmm. which can either be dedicated within the department or guys who are outside of the department. Maybe they sit on the creative side. Mm-hmm. But you have copywriters, you have art directors,
yeah.
And you have your creative director.
Yeah.
And then the guys who oversees all those talents is now the head of digital. Mm. Who's a guy who can do everything everyone does.
Okay.
Because you understand everyone's role.
Yeah.
You've worked vertically throughout the entire structure. You can tell when someone is crapping yeah. around. You know, yeah. you guys are not doing, you're not you're pulling not doing your socks. Job, yeah. You can spot the gaps in the department. Yeah. You can see where you need to reinforce stuff. You can tell when you need to add more talent to the department. So that's the head of digital.
Okay.
And then that's the guy who reports directly to the executive creative creative director.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The guy who now is, okay, so we sit down, you have an idea. Your idea has limitations. Yeah. It can't be interpreted on digital, or if it's interpreted on digital, use this direction. Yeah. So you do a lot of strategic input at the top level, and then you have guys now do the physical and the everyday work below you.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I think that's a really comprehensive response. We'll try and turn that into an infographic.
You can actually do it, yeah.
I want to move to the influencing side of things.
Yeah.
Because at some point, if I'm not mistaken, you decide, at the time when your family decide to take on influencer life full time.
Yeah.
And generate money and I guess live off of influencer money. Yeah. One, what brings about that decision? And then I guess we can discuss what that process actually was like.
So influencing to me used to be a side gig. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it became such a big side gig for me. Like, do you know how people are just known for being like a commentary? Like, nowadays you see the guys on studio, when you watch the news, mm-hmm. there's a guy who's called as an expert on everything. Mm. Do you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This guy has a comment on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
When there's a political debate, he'll be in the studio.
Yeah.
When there's a debate about the economy, he'll be in the studio. Yeah. He's a well-read guy.
Yeah.
It's not that they don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. They just know enough and they're interesting enough to be the guys that are called into the studio and there's something to be discussed.
Yeah.
When you need an expert, the experts are the guys doing economics mm-hmm. at World Bank. You know, this guy is he's an enthusiast. He's an economy enthusiast, you know.
Yeah.
They call them enthusiasts.
Yeah.
So I got into influencing as an enthusiast of a lot of different topics, mm-hmm. Ranging from advertising, art, sports. Mm-hmm. I'm not a sports journalist. I'm not an athlete, but I follow a lot of those things a lot. So I would follow a lot of that stuff and mm-hmm. comment on it a lot. Mm-hmm. And so in those interactions, I started growing a fan base and a followership based on common interests.
Yeah.
And so I got to a point where I had around like 12,000 followers. Mm-hmm. And Scannard was running its first influencer program. I think they were the first ones to run it. Mm-hmm. An influencer campaign. Mm-hmm. It was a pilot thing. And they reached out to me. Like, you know, the way you write your content, the way you explain things, the way you communicate with people.
Yeah.
We want to give you a gig where you're going to be promoting a specific product.
Yeah.
And we're going to pay you 25,000.
Yeah.
At that point, nobody had ever given me 25,000 to do anything for them.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm a volunteer, you know, and just chilling, you know, for the most part of the day, I'm painting t-shirts and selling t-shirts as customizable items. Yeah. I was used to paint on shoes. The same thing I used to do in primary school for sets.
I just carried it
now after school. I was doing jackets. I was customizing denim jackets. Yeah. I was customizing shoes. I was customizing jeans and I'm getting paid to do that.
Yeah.
In between, I'm volunteering. And then there's this social media thing coming up. So they pay me like 25 Gs to push a product. And I'm like, bro, you can actually earn That's the first, nobody ever paid me with a check before
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That's my first check I banked.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, you can make this just by being online.
Yeah.
I was in 2011, I think. Mm-hmm. And so it became a regular thing because yeah. now you see the thing about advertising is people follow trends.
Yeah.
So what happens with the big agencies, a lot of small agencies replicate.
Yeah.
Now, if the big agencies mess up, a lot of the small ones mess up because yeah. they always follow the success model.
Yeah.
So the success models, and sometimes you're a victim of your own success.
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah.
I got into influencing and I started making money off gigs.
Yeah.
First was Twitter, and then I opened Instagram, came along. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time Instagram was only just strictly for mm-hmm. iPhone users.
Yeah.
They open it up to everyone, us guys in gear, Duke, Androids, yeah. and pixelated yeah. photos yeah. with our Androids.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you get, how much money must you be making to get to the point that you're like, you know what, let's give this influencer thing a shot?
So I can tell you since I started doing influencer campaigns in 2012, mm-hmm. the only time I've ever done influencer campaigns full-time mm-hmm. was, I think, during the pandemic, mm-hmm. in 2020, I'd say, to 2021, mm-hmm. before the second and the third lockdown. Mm-hmm. Business was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was doing it full-time. Mm-hmm. I was in the process of establishing a couple of businesses out of town. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, when people hype working from home and you think that's going to be the future,
yeah.
and then things go back to normal, like you also have to go back to normal.
Yeah.
So I'm back to normal.
So this specific period I'm talking about is, if I'm not mistaken, well, I guess while the green calabash was still around, there was a point in time where I think I saw a video of you saying, I'm going back to work. This influencer creative economy isn't sustainable right now. So yeah. I'm going back to work. That's specifically what I'm asking about.
It's the same example I was giving. You know, you could go work somewhere where someone guarantees you, I'll give you 40 G's mm-hmm. on the 27th of every month, mm-hmm. and you can plan yourself with that 40K. Mm-hmm. Versus you saying, I can make 90.
In 3 months.
No, you'll make it in 1 month,
yeah.
but it'll take you 3 months to be paid.
Yeah. Ah, right.
You get me? Yes, so when you do your math, if you have to wait 1 month for 40K, mm-hmm. compared to you have to wait 90 days for 90K, even if you work within the same month.
Yeah.
It means the guy who's paying you after 90 days has actually paid you 30K per month.
Yeah.
This 40K that's guaranteed is what you can make, you know?
Yeah.
Now, when you have responsibilities, mm-hmm. it's a very simple. Let me go for security.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And so, what ended up happening was when I recorded a video on Green Calabash saying I'm going back to employment. It's not that I wasn't employed; I was running my own consultancy agency, mm-hmm. and was doing well. Mm-hmm. So, I felt like being outside sometimes, especially when you're in an industry that's ever evolving and it's just growing, mm-hmm. if you do it on a personal level, you either have to do it as an owner mm-hmm. who has no interest of going back to ever mm-hmm. refresh their skill sets. Mm-hmm. Because if you're out there for a long time and the agencies are the ones being equipped with what's new in the industry, mm-hmm. what's innovation and all that, at some point you'll have to go back to learn what's happening now.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Yeah.
When I went back to employment, I went to learn, okay, media has really grown. Mm-hmm. Influencer marketing has really grown.
Yeah.
I'm not going back as an influencer. I'm not going back as a copywriter. I went back as a business head. Mm-hmm. I'm heading about 8 to 12 businesses. I'm in charge of what they're communicating online. Mm-hmm. And so that was a point where I learned a lot of the stuff that I need to know in terms of, you know, what are the innovations that are currently there. Mm-hmm. What can I integrate into my strategies? What can I, how much value can I give brands if I add some of these elements? That's what I went back to learn.
Okay.
Yeah.
And based off your experience, what should a an influence I've been making on an, even if you're going to work on an annual basis, because of course the payment structures are 90 days among other things, but how much should you be expecting to make a year, in a year, if you're a good influencer?
I'll tell you what, influencing has much to do with the brand you build and how you engage with people, just as it does the number of followers you have. There's a reason why it's categorized. You have nano influencers, you have micros, you have macros, you have celebrities.
Yeah,
they all work differently. Yeah. And you'll notice with celebrities, and I guess a lot of people work with influencers nowadays, with celebrities, the engagement rate is quite low.
Yeah.
So it depends on what you're selling. If you just need awareness, you can work with celebs.
Yeah.
They charge more, they engage less. Because you find like a celebrity who has a million followers, it's not going to engage a million people.
Yeah.
Those are just the number of guys that follow that person.
Yeah.
I'm interested in you because you sing. You know, I love your music. Mm. I don't care about what you sell, but if you're selling something to me and I learn about it through you,
yeah,
you know, that's for awareness.
Yeah.
I would say if you have a good brand and you have a considerable amount of followers, then there's no reason why you shouldn't be earning less than 100K per gig. And the gigs don't come every month. You know, you'll find instances where maybe you do a gig for 6 months and then the rest of the time there's nothing coming along, even for celebrities who are influencers.
Yeah.
You don't get that a million bob deal every month.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the one thing people don't realize about influencing is you have to play the long game. Because if you're doing every gig every month, every year, the same brands who are giving you these gigs after 2 years will be like, no, he's been overused. Let's look for someone new.
Yeah, they're the ones who've used you.
It's the same people who are giving you the business will tell you that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to play the long game in terms of how are you evolving as a person? Mm. How are you evolving as a brand? So there's going to be a lot of highs and lows. The lows where you're not getting gigs are where you're building the highs. Mm. Like as a person, how are you growing? Mm. Are you maturing? Mm. You know? Are you growing your brand, your personal brand? Are you growing yourself as a person, as you, not as your handle, you know? And Ramsey from 10 years ago is not Ramsey in 2023.
Yeah.
We're totally different people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still have the same character, but in terms of personality,
yeah,
I've been exposed to different things. So I'm growing with my audience.
Yeah.
So you have to remember as an influencer, you have to grow with your audience.
Yeah.
A lot of guys let their audience outgrow them. So you're stuck in the things you're doing in 2013.
Yeah.
Of course, you're going to command less money.
Yeah.
Like right now, a lot of the influencer gigs are going to Gen Zs. Mm. As guys, you know, millennials. Unless you've built a brand that's like where a lot of your peers are.
Yeah.
You're not going to be... out. Yeah, you're not going to be struggling and fighting with Gen Zs for gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're hungrier.
They're hungrier. They're doing more than you. They're charging less sometimes. You think you have experience.
Yeah.
They have been on this platform 10 years, so I'll charge you for 10 years. Nobody cares, bro. Nobody cares.
So if you were to try and get, and I want to put you in a box, if you were to try and get some sort of average, because yes, there's the sporadic gigs that come and go, but if we were to try and give some sort of average, like what would we be saying a good influencer would be making?
A good influencer probably makes...
A year.
In a year, maybe 500 Gs.
Yeah.
That's in a proper year.
Yeah.
On the minimum, on the lower side.
And again, based off of your experience in agency, I want to tap into that a little bit. For someone who's doing this a bit more professionally and is like, this is my thing. Like, I'm really creating content.
I would say like...
Guys sending you rate cards and stuff.
In terms of frequency, if you're really good at what you do, maybe in a year you'll get like four to like six gigs, good paying gigs.
Yeah.
And each of those gigs maybe is anything between 200 to like maybe four sock. And you get like maybe four to six in a year. So I'd say if you're good at what you're doing as an influencer, you make minimum maybe a million bob in a year.
Yeah. Okay.
A million bob in a year. But that, you know, that comes after you invest in yourself.
Yeah.
Invest in your brand. I think one of the biggest takeouts for me has been that You know how people say, I wish you looked at me the way I look at myself.
Yeah.
My friends tell me, bro, you know you're a brand. And I'd be like, what do you mean a brand? Yeah. What is that pressure? I don't need that pressure on myself.
Yeah.
So I would carry myself as a regular person on the internet because that was my formula when I began. Okay. And I saw no need to change it because once you change your brand, you sort of lose out on a lot of the guys who followed you for a specific reason.
Yeah.
Like, if I followed you because you post demonic stuff, and then you start posting holy, holy things, bro, I'm done, I'm gone, I'm sorry. May I followed you for the toxic stuff.
Yeah.
So I've evolved my brand. I wouldn't say I've evolved it in the way that, you know, Rama, you're an influencer, now think like a brand, you know, you're a brand. But then I've grown with my content is reflective of where I am in life.
Yeah.
So I've never felt the need to have a brand, so to speak, because the problem with also having a brand, and this is something that someone said, I don't know who said, but the more you build yourself into your brand, the more you build yourself into a brand, the less control you have over what the brand does. So if you're there pushing yourself as a corporate person and one day you just feel like, I mean, I need to walk from here to Sujua. Let me walk home. People start seeing on the road, they start saying, oh, this guy chapad. Jama, look at him. Squandered his riches. Every time you're just walking home because it's healthy, you know. This guy is squandered. Or sometimes, if, for example, you've become a dad, you've become a mom, and you're not sharing that with guys, then all of a sudden, one day, people just see you, the seven-year-old. You say, "Aka kana fichanga watoto." You know. So you have to be honest. And I think with influencing, the most important thing is authenticity is your currency. And you don't go, you don't need to go out of your way to prove that you're authentic. You just have to be reflective of where you are in life. Like, I used to eat at a kibanda. Like, when I got into agency, I used to enjoy those 10 bob samosas beside the road. And then one day I started eating samosas from China Plate. Because we were in the same building. Then I went home and tried those samosas. Like, I've been eating crap for the last 3 years. I am never doing that again. So I moved. I don't eat kibanda samosas
anymore.
No. I mean, if I can get myself this.
Then
I mean, why am I working hard?
Okay. I'm being harassed here for time. But I want to really talk about this. And this other element is, I guess, family and money. And sort of how that comes in. Let me start at a rather sensitive point potentially, which is, and the reason I'm also asking is because I, in one way or another, went through, or have been through, or, you know, went through a pretty similar thing is when you meet your ex, when you meet your ex, how many people are speaking to you about the financial commitment that it would require for you to be in a long-term relationship with her as sort of a, whether it's a deterrence or awareness thing of basically just letting you know, like, are you sure? Do you know how much this is going to take? Do you know what this is going to look like? Do you have any conversations of that sort?
I think in terms of finances, you have to speak to the person you're getting into anything serious with from the very beginning. This is how much I make. How much do you make? If we were to combine our efforts, because you see now we're talking to, we're in a different generation. And then I keep telling guys all the time, like, we are the most confused lot ever. You know, our folks, when they were growing up, when they were our age, all they had to worry about was, am I a provider? So their confusion came in the sense of there's a clash. And there's identity issues between culture and religion. Because your Guka, your dad probably never practiced Christianity. They were not born into that religion, whether it's Christianity or whether it's Islam. They were not born into that. So their identity issues came in the sense of, you know, me, I'm a provider. But I'm very confused about whether I should follow traditional things or Western things. So there was that identity crisis and identity issues around that. With dudes our age, we've accepted. If your dad was Muslim, me, I'm Muslim. If you have those cultural things, you accept them. I've been brought up into these things. Our identity problems now come in a sense of, now it's time to live with somebody else. babes have been empowered. Mm-hmm. Me, I'm talking about babes have been empowered as a city boy. Mm-hmm. What I see, I don't know about the countryside. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe different out
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But me, the babes I talk to,
empowered.
They empowered women. They can afford their own drinks.
I saw a tweet the other day. You don't go out with Nairobi babes. They'll get you drunk and then take you home in their Mazdas.
Yeah. So the women I'm talking to are empowered.
Yeah.
And if you're getting into anything serious with somebody who's empowered, remember the money gives you power to walk away if you want to.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It's no longer a hold. I can't come to a babe and say I have money so I can do what I want because, you know, you need the money and I'm the one making it.
Yeah.
She's making just as much as you most times or even more in other cases.
Yeah.
So you need to have those conversations with women you're dating and just say, hey, listen, guy, you know what? This is how much I make. This is my underwear money. You know, this no matter what happens, I need this.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep asking you, do I take 5 G's from the joint account so I can buy myself underwear? Yeah. That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So
you
put some for yourself. Mm-hmm. Tell her as well, you need bra money.
What?
You can't keep coming to the joint account to ask me for money so you can buy yourself bras and panties. That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So you separate those. Mm-hmm. Then you say, okay, so we're coming together and we're planning life long term. Mm-hmm. What do we need for a long time? Mm-hmm. What do we need for that long term thing to work? First, we need maybe a moti. Mm-hmm. We need a decent place to live. Mm-hmm. Before you even think of mortgages and houses, we need a moti. We need a decent place to live. We need living expenses. Mm-hmm. And then you decide, okay, so I'm going to take care of this. Mm-hmm. You take care of that. Mm-hmm. That's how you do it. Mm-hmm. Because, and it's something I keep telling all my buddies, I keep telling everybody, you're either a traditional man, you go for a traditional woman, mm-hmm. or you're a modern man and go for a modern woman. You can't be...
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. You. I don't date babes who tell me you have to take care of everything. Because me, bro, what are you working for if you can't chip in?
Yeah.
If you can't chip in, what is your money for?
Yeah.
Because one day you'll wake up, stand up and leave. Then you don't take half of my stuff.
Yeah.
And you are saving all your money. How? Only I'm stupid. You think I'm foolish? You know what I mean? So you have to have those finance conversations early on and say, hey, for us to be happy, for us to be content with the life we have, these are the things we need. This is the amount of money we need to put in these projects. I'm going to bring this. You bring that.
Yeah.
And it works respectfully. Because at some point, if you don't have that conversation, a lot of disrespect will check in.
Yeah.
Like, you see how people behave and they pay for everything.
Yeah.
At some point, I'll forget and tell you, you're not even a contributor in this thing. What are you telling me? And it will come out when you're pissed, you know, like, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And also for babes, me, I'd encourage, because I have sisters. I have sisters. I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. I always tell women, like, if you're working for your money, you spend your money with or on things you love. With people you love or on things you love.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to spend your money on something you love, then why are you working?
Yeah.
See, you just bum.
Yeah.
And then say, I need a traditional man to take care of me.
Yeah.
So they do. They do that. But you can't be a modern woman looking for a traditional man.
Yeah.
Or a traditional man looking for a modern woman. Yeah. It will never work.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have two questions for you in that context. One is potential low point.
Yeah.
Low financial point that you had as a single man, and what that did or does for you psychologically and emotionally, against a low point as a family man, and what that is now psychologically and emotionally, and what the difference potentially is, if there is any.
So I'd say as my lowest point financially as a single man came when I was in Malindi. Yeah, and this was one of the reasons I decided to move. Mm-hmm. I had worked, I had done a couple of big projects, and unfortunately, you know, I'd done the work through agencies. Mm-hmm. And it was an influencer work, it was a lot of production work, a combination of influencer stuff, but it included a lot of production. Mm-hmm. So I was unable to raise rent for about, I think, 3 months. And my landlord was Italian. It's called Mr. Ilario. You know, people always complain about landlords. Me, I have the best thing to say about my landlord. because I took him my LPO. I took my LPOs to him and I told him, bro, listen, I'm not liquid right now. I have money, but it's not in my pockets. This is my LPO. If you allow me to continue living here and work without stress, I promise you when I'm paid, I'll sort you out. And I did that. He used to call me like, are you okay? You know, are you, do you want to live here? Do you want to, because I was, when I was moving back to Nairobi, he even asked me like, do you want to keep the house? Are you moving back? You know, all the best. You know, he wished me everything because we learned how to live together. That was my lowest point. The fact that I had to reach out to someone and ask them, hey, you know, pandemic is crazy, bro. We're all working remotely. And that's the first time I felt isolated as a single man. I felt like I have nobody to reach out to. Nobody knows what I'm going through. At that point, I'm still paying. I'm still supposed to pay nannies. I'm supposed to pay rent. I have utility bills. I still need Wi-Fi. There's no regular check coming in. I know I have a lot of money, but it's not in my pocket. And that's when I decided to move to Nairobi. I was like, I'd rather struggle where I'm closer to my friends. If I'm going to freelance and be a struggling freelancer, I would rather struggle where, you know, in a week, if I say, this week, I need to make 20 Gs. I can wake up in that week, I promise you I'll make that 20K. It's easier to do that in Nairobi than when you're not out, when you're out there, outside of Nairobi. Because when you know what they say about Nairobians, out of sight, out of mind. You leave Nairobi, everybody assumes, you know, you're no longer interested. Oh, you're a Meshiba. That's what they say. You've made enough. You don't need more. You made enough. So they don't even consider you for plans. They don't reach out to you. And, you know, and I'm like, bro, it's the same me. On the same, I have the same platforms, the same potential, the same impact. It's just that I'm not in a place where I can get to you in half an hour. You know, So that was the first as a single man. As a family man, I'd say the lowest point for me financially again was when I worked with someone. They subcontracted me to provide digital services for them. And this guy just would never pay me on time. I remember I'd just gotten a kid. My son was just was born. And this guy would never pay me on time. Like, he subcontracted me. I'd pangad myself with the money. So in the next 6 months to 1 year, this is how I'm going to grow my small agency. And I tell you, I kid you not, in the first 6 months, I only got 2 payments. So everything else was taking money from here, slapping it here, taking money from here, slapping it there. And what that does for you, you're not liquid. So you're not able to fulfill a lot of the ambitions and dreams you have for yourself. And after 6 months, I told the guy, you know what? It's fine. I don't need this stress. Let me just go back to regular job, a regular job.
Was there a difference in, I guess, psychological, emotional states in both those?
There was. Because see, for a lot of guys, you know, you identify yourself as a provider. Without that provision, who are you? Like, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a pressure you put on yourself, but it's something you have to step up to. You're not going to sit in a corner one day and just cry because there's no work. There's no CG what. Bro, you have to go out there and look for money. Because money is respect. You know, the more of it you have, the more respect you have. The more of it you have, the more freedom you have. The more shots you can call. So it's in everybody's interest to make sure at the bare minimum, you have to make something for yourself that can accord you the respect you want to receive.
Okay, last question. I'm seeing these guys are looking at me badly. Last question. Again, in a family context, when you're now, I come from a separated household. My folks are separated. But when you're now considering or sort of going down that road, what role does finance, like, what role does finance play in that contribution? I'm married now, and I guess in my darkest dreams, where I'm like, you know, God forbid, I do, you know, wonder, and I'm like, oh, if this was to happen, Like, would I have the grace to be like, yeah, let's split this down the middle, or let's figure out how this and that would go?
Yeah.
Yeah. What goes through your mind at that particular point?
I think I was angry for almost a year.
Yeah.
Because, see, when you link up with someone to do anything long term,
yeah,
you stop thinking about yourself as an individual.
Yeah.
Now you're thinking teamwork.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you've done your long-term plans based on teamwork. So if you want to buy a car, it's teamwork. This is what we're supposed to do together. You know, we already had this conversation before we got serious.
Yeah.
If you want to buy land, if you want to buy, you know, anything you're doing, once you know you're part of a team, you stop thinking individualistic.
Yeah, right.
Now everything is a team. And then, you know, like down the road, you realize, well, you know, I'm in the team alone. Yeah. And now you get so angry because now you have to pick up some of those things as individual responsibilities when you got into that thing knowing these are team responsibilities.
Yeah.
And so I was very angry.
Yeah.
And for me, I think it jerked something inside me because I had my low point. Mm-hmm. I had two low points. Mm-hmm. It was that one. And you know, could fix it by going back to employment.
Yeah.
And this guy is stressing me. He's a business partner, but he's not meeting his end of the stick. Mm-hmm. He's not holding on to it. Mm-hmm. My remedy was go back to employment. Mm-hmm. For the second one, now I was like, okay, do I go back to employment or do I risk it as a businessman? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just decided, you know what? Diversify your income streams. There's nothing wrong with working. Mm-hmm. Just make sure you have things on the side that make up for what you thought was a team. Mm. So if I need two extra side hustles to make up for what I thought I was going to get from a team, then that's what I've been working on for the last year or so.
Yeah.
Just to establish, like, I don't want start stops. Mm. So I've been very cautious. Mm. It made me a bit cautious. I'm still a risk taker, but then I take more times before I make my decision. It takes me longer to make a decision because now I have to assess everything. What's the long-term benefit, short-term benefits, in the near future, what's going to happen if things go this way? Mm-hmm. And that's how I make my decisions now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last question. And so I guess when you're, because you talked about a joint account, when you're looking at, and I guess many couples do have joint accounts, when you're looking at a joint account now and you're like, okay, so what happens here? My question is, you know, what does it take, if you have answered the question, like, what does it take to not be clouded by whether it's anger, whether it's residual negative feelings towards someone or something, to be like, you know what, let me be rational about this. Let me try and have some sort of rational agreement about how this joint account is going to get distributed or split among whatever I'm going to do and whatever the next person's going to do. Yeah.
It takes a bit of, first, you have to be confident in your ability to make money. Because if scarcity mentality checks in, oh my gosh, you know, you're going to spiral out of control. You have to be confident in your ability to make money. And then secondly, you also have to be, self-aware. It takes a level of self-awareness to say, even if I go through a split, or a divorce or a breakup, if I still have the ability to make money, I'm not going to spend my money trying to escape what I'm feeling. If I'm angry, if I'm disappointed, it's not going to take my money.
Yeah.
Because then you'll do a lot of stupid mistakes that you're going to regret later on.
Yeah.
So it takes a bit of discipline. It takes a bit of innovation. You have to be innovative now, okay? So if we can't make 30K from this source, where are we going to make it from?
Yeah.
It drives you to be a bit more innovative. And then it also opens. I still have that entrepreneurial mind from primary school. Personally, when I say diversify your portfolio, I mean exactly that. Your portfolio doesn't have to be something that brings you 200,000, 300,000, five different companies that bring you 300,000, 500,000. It could be two that bring you 20, 30 Gs, and then you have maybe one that brings you 300 Gs. Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's diversify your sources of income.
Yeah. Okay. So what are you looking forward to now? I guess what should we expect to see from
Expect Rama Ramzi to come back bigger. I've been hibernating for a year and a half, just doing my plans. Because, you know, when you come back to Nairobi, after you see what's possible outside of Nairobi, you come back to Nairobi with a very different mindset. The stuff I saw, the life I saw when I was outside of Nairobi, like if I take Nairobi money outside of Nairobi, what I can get, I finally started seeing why, you know, there's a how do you say it? There's a reverse migration happening. Mm-hmm. Us guys want to go to Europe and the Americas to make money. Mm-hmm. The guys in Americas and Europe are coming to invest along the coastline. So they can make money. Because the amount of money you have in Nairobi, whatever you're making in Nairobi, if you're to transfer your expenses, the same expenses, outside of Nairobi, if you could work remotely full-time, bro, you'd have a very different life. Your quality of life. And everything I saw when I was in Malindi really opened my mind up to the possibilities that I can actually achieve if I came back to Nairobi with a focused and serious mind.
Yeah.
Make your money and then find a way to make your money work for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That was something. I think this has been our longest podcast. But you know what? I told these guys yesterday when said you were coming, I was like, I think this is potentially going to be really long.
Yeah.
So I warned them at the very least. But thank you so much. This is another episode. I hope you've learned or picked up a gem or two. This is Rama, who was pretty vulnerable and told us quite a bit of information. This is Financially Incorrect. Remember to like, subscribe, and comment. Tell us what guests you want to see next. And follow us also on Instagram, on TikTok. I think we have a Twitter as well. We'll see you on the next episode.